Hey, this is Kate from Minneapolis.
I'm Adam from Montreal.
I'm Tucker Campbell from Anchorage, Alaska.
The Sound of Young America is produced independently and supported by listeners like you and me.
You should support the show like I did.
Just visit MaximumFun.org/donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne, live on tape from my house in Los Angeles. It's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International. It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest on the program is the novelist John Brandon. He's a professor at Ole Miss University, and his new book is called Citrus County. It's set in Citrus County, Florida, which is a simultaneously northern and southern part of Florida, physically northern and culturally southern, a place where there are no beaches, and thus people have not bothered to turn it into Orlando. It's the story of two middle schoolers and a middle school teacher and a horrible crime and basically the feeling of being lost in one's life, either as a very well-justified adolescent or as a maybe slightly less justified almost 30-year-old. John Brandon, welcome to The Sound of Young America.
Thanks a lot.
So can you describe the three main characters that are at the center of the book for us?
Yeah, like you said, the one adult is Mr. Hibma, and he's a middle school teacher. And I tried to teach high school a few years ago, and I lasted a semester.
Wow, didn't even make it through a year.
No, sadly, no. I just kind of quietly crashed and burned, you know, and just knew that I wasn't going to make it. Kids just ran all over me, and not 1 minute of any day did it feel natural that I was doing what I was doing. But, you know, I really just couldn't do anything about it, and it just, I guess, left a bad taste in my mouth. So a couple of years later, I started writing Mr. Hibma, and I'm sure it's partly based on that, which is rare. You know, usually your characters, especially the central characters, it's so hard to say where they come from to unpack it all. It's just an amalgamation. But this one was, I think, pretty directly influenced by my own experiences. but Mr. Hibma is different than me in that he stays in there and fights. You know, he really wants to be able to be a teacher. He doesn't understand why he can't be. He knows that he is probably smarter than the other teachers, but they're just so much better at it than he is. It's so hard for him. But, he stays in there and he keeps trying. And he also gets by with some dark fantasies. And he can do things that I never could do and say things to people that I never could say. So he was fun for me to write for those reasons. And then the kids, Toby and Shelby, I mean, who knows about them? They,
possibly you.
If I don't, I guess we're lost. But I grew up not far from Citrus County, two counties south, Pasco County. And just as a real general thing, there just was nothing for young people, you know. But I didn't have a bad childhood or anything like that. But there was this sense every day of like, well, what are we going to do? There's just all these old people everywhere. And then some other teenagers. Anybody with any wherewithal in their 20s would leave. You know, that's sort of changing now. But you just always felt like you weren't supposed to be there. So I think at least at the level of the foundation, maybe that's where Toby and Shelby came from.
You know, a lot of writers like to write about what they know, right? Like they like to write about their hometown, or you know, they're writing about literary gadflies in New York City or whatever it is. And you seem to have decided to write about what you kind of know. The thing that has some separation from what your experience was, rather than, you know, writing a story about life on Mars or writing a story about life in the county that you actually did grow up in.
Yeah, yeah, that's the space that I like to be in, where I know it well enough to know the energy, but I don't know it so well that my imagination has nothing to do. You know, I feel hemmed in if I know the place that well physically, or if you have a lot of, to me, if I have a lot of emotional attachments, then that gets in the way. It clouds things. I can't just freely imagine it the way I need it to be. I grew up a couple of counties from Citrus County, but never lived there or anything. But I used to drive through it between Pasco County and Gainesville when I was in college, driving to Gainesville and back. There was nothing to stop me. You know, you just drive through. But every time I drove through, I would think, I could use this as a setting. You know, I was very young writer then, but already thinking there's this weird energy here that I can't figure out at all. But I bet if I tried to figure it out, you know, that would lead to something good.
You were a high school teacher. Why did you choose to make these two kid characters middle school aged?
That's a good question. I haven't thought about that in a while, but that was something that I had to think about. I think I wanted them to still be where they had some claim to childhood and then some claim to the adult world. And then part of that was probably because, like we're talking about geographically, middle school's like that, kind of in between high school and elementary school, which have, to me, more distinct feels. And then there's just this 2 years where you're absolutely lost. You know, you're in between the two things. I think that interested me more, maybe.
It's quite literally liminal. It's in the middle. It's middle school. I feel like we can't. I feel like we can't really discuss the book that much without at least revealing the big horrible thing that happens about maybe 40 or 50 pages in, which is that Toby, one of the students in the book, who's sort of a loner, a little bit of a lost loner type, kidnaps the young, like, 4-year-old sister of Shelby, who's a sort of more bookish, achievey loner type.
Yeah, Toby is he's not wanting to be another of the thousands of kind of petty delinquents that Citrus County is full of. You know, doing their small vandalisms and such. So he gets filled with this idea that he is better than them because he's more evil. You know, he can achieve a higher evil than them and set himself apart, kind of prove himself to himself. And then the opportunity kind of comes along because there's this girl, Shelby, who he obviously is very interested in. You know, if he was 25 years old, I guess he would just ask her out on a date or something. But he's just very confused by the fact that he likes her and she seems to like him, which is really terrifying to him. Somehow he cracks the idea of kidnapping her younger sister, you know, as a way to just act out and who knows. And then, you know, pretty quickly realizes that it wasn't a great idea and there's really not much glamour to it. And it's really just a lot of chores. And he just kind of, you know, goes downhill from there, I guess.
The other big thing that's going on in his life, besides this sort of adolescent romance and this kidnapping that he's perpetrated, is deciding to become a pole vaulter.
Right. Well, he, like I say, after he does this deed, he starts to regret it immediately for a few reasons. You know, first of all, it's just so much work. Somewhere in there, I guess, regular old guilt, you know, will start to creep in. His response to this is to try to sort of become a normal you know, student, it's kind of, you know, his storyline, I guess, is kind of mirroring Mr. Hibma's, who wants to be a normal teacher. You know, so Toby just starts his new program, you know, starts to become, well, I want to get B's, and nobody really noticed that. And then I have to join a sports team like everybody else. And then, you know, nobody will notice me, and just kind of do everything in a middling way that everybody else does. So yeah, he still somehow ends up, you know, pole vaulting, I guess, rather than running in the relay. That's more interesting.
It's sort of like David Letterman started a scholarship program at Ball State, I think, is his alma mater for students with GPAs between like 2.5 and 3.25 or something
true?
Like that. Yeah. He felt like there wasn't enough scholarships for people who are okay.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's an underrepresented group.
More of my conversation with novelist John Brandon when we return on The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International. The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered online at ask.metafilter.com. And by Smith Micro Software, makers of Stuff It Deluxe, designed to move files simply and securely wherever customers want them to go. For Mac and PC, online at stuffit.com. Coverage of the world of comedy on The Sound of Young America is supported by Humber College, offering a two-year program dedicated to comedy. Students learn stand-up, improv, acting, and writing skills and perform in the heart of Toronto. At Humber, we make funny people funny. More information at humbercomedy.com. It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is the novelist John Brandon. His latest book is Citrus County. It's a novel about some lost adolescence, and he himself had a lost adolescence. I wonder how did you feel as an adolescent growing up in Florida in a place that I can't imagine had a buzzing and exciting literary community where you could find lots of great mentors, maybe like a mall bookstore.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully I had a kind of pleasantly uneventful childhood that I,
no
I,
kidnappings.
Right. No, I mean, I would wish my childhood on anyone. But then, yeah, I guess the other side of the coin was there wasn't anything going on that you could classify as culture, just not anything. Everywhere is strip malls nowadays, but I would go out on a limb and say that Newport Richey, Florida is the strip malliest of all, you know, and they're all like middle of the line kind of 25-year-old strip malls just everywhere. What I ended up doing, I played just tons of sports when I was real young, and then somewhere around, I guess.
And you're a big athletic guy, too, I should point out. For those who are hearing you speaking in the voice of a sweet, friendly novelist, you are a strapping man.
Big still, if not athletic anymore. around ninth or tenth grade or something, I kind of lost interest in playing a lot of the sports. I guess everybody's got competitive streak for some things. I guess just sports wasn't what mine was for. And I started reading a lot, and we lived very close to this mall, like you say, and it had one of those little Walden books in it, which probably is.
I think Walden Books is out of business.
Yeah, that sort of thing is probably extinct. But if you can think back to how there'd be a mall and there'd be an Orange Julius and everyone, and there'd be this tiny Walden Books. And I used to go up there and steal books from the Walden Books to take home and read. And if you remember how small they were, it was like there was bestsellers, the hugest bestsellers, and then there was classics. And then magazines, basically some cookbooks. So, and I had no idea what to read. I mean, I had no real guidance, you know, in that area. Maybe most people don't when you're in ninth or 10th grade. So I would just grab anything, and 3/4 of it I could not understand at all. It would be philosophy or old German philosophers. I wouldn't understand a word of it, but I would just read it all. And it wasn't costing me any money, so I would just kind of skim some of them and just get another one.
I mean, it's surprising to me to hear the story of someone, going to the bookstore and stealing books as an adolescent who isn't like stealing, Jack Kerouac, or like Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, if I did, it would be an absolute accident. I remember one time I got American Psycho. That was a big enough book to be in the Walden Books. And that sort of blew my mind at that age. I just thought, wow, so you can just say this in a book? Like, holy cow. I mean, that was probably, eye-opening. And then when I got more wherewithal, then when I got one that I knew was good, I would just read all there was of that person, rather than just keep randomly. So, I'd hit Dickens and just read a bunch of Dickens. And like you say, Kerouac at some point, maybe, 11th, 12th grade, I hit, and then, read all of his stuff and got infected with wanderlust, of course, from if you read Kerouac at that age. Couldn't wait to leave Newport Richey after that.
You mentioned the wanderlust that infects the teenage Jack Kerouac reader. You wrote your first two novels, Citrus County and the previous one, Arkansas, largely while being like sort of semi-itinerant after college. Tell me like what your life was for the years after college.
Well, my wife now, my girlfriend at the time, we were all done with college and everything, and we ended up living in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is a really nice place. She had a jobby job, and I was just doing a little adjuncting and then working at factories and stuff, temp work. And it was fine, but we started thinking it's not over, right? This isn't it. We can't just stay here forever. So she, as health professionals can do, she signed on with one of these traveling companies, like you've heard of traveling nurses and stuff, where they send you somewhere every 3 months. And so we said, well, sure, let's try this. So we started doing it, and this was when the economy was really, really good. So we could just blow into town. She'd have her, her job waiting on her from the company. I would just go to the temp agency, tell them, I'm not picky. I just want to work. And the next day, usually, I would be, at a warehouse or something. It was so easy. And, we'd just stay there for 3 months. And we just had what we could fit in our two cars, and then pack up and go to the next place that the company sent us.
Did you in doing this in moving every 3 months, feel that kind of almost adolescent sort of weird dislocation and alienation just from not having friends that live in the same place as you?
Yeah, I wouldn't put the word alienation on it though, because there wasn't that much that was negative about it. I mean, it was mostly fun.
Because I've like every time, like when I've moved, like I remember just moving back from college, moving back to San Francisco where I grew up when most of my friends had gone to college elsewhere and lived other places, or moving here to Los Angeles when I moved here to Los Angeles, even though I was with my then girlfriend, now wife, who I love very much. We get along like gangbusters. It still was just like, oh my God, like you just realize the first 6 months that you're there, you're like, I don't know anything. I don't know anyone. Like, I don't have any control over anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the fact that you knew that it was only going to be 3 months helped everything. It made it where you could just focus on everything that was positive, because anything that was negative, you're leaving in 3 months. So it doesn't really matter. I mean, that's kind of what allowed me to, I guess, to, get up at 5:30 in the morning and go to the warehouse. A lot of days, it's just, if you have that light at the end of the tunnel, you can sort of put up with anything. But also knowing that it was going to be a different situation in 3 months because, you know, we, like you say, we'd be kind of in the middle of nowhere sort of for one of them. And it would get a little bit like that. But then, you know, the next one would be in Los Angeles and we'd have a few friends, or the next one would be in, you know, we did one down in Florida once, you know, and be around people. So it's, you know, the loneliness is just, it's there, but you know, something else is going to come along. And then we just kind of felt we had that vacation mentality the whole time, to just looking forward to the weekend and going to do everything you could do in that area, because we'd probably never be back. So, I mean, I think it was mostly fun. But yeah, when we got to Oxford, it was nice then to feel like you could attach yourself to someone. You know, that's another thing that happens when you're only going to be there 3 months. You just don't, you kind of keep to yourself a little just for the fact of you're just going to leave. So it's, you don't really want to put yourself into starting a bunch of friendships or anything. You know, it's nice in Oxford to just be able to, you know, carry on normal, you know, relationships with people.
John Brandon, thank you so much for taking the time to be on The Sound of Young America.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
John Brandon's wonderful new novel is called Citrus County. It's available now in bookstores from McSweeney's. That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I have been your host, Jesse Thorne. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our music is provided by Dan Wally. The show is edited by Nick White. Our producer, Julia Smith. You can find us online at MaximumFun.org, where you can download all of our programs 1,000% for free, or subscribe to our free podcast in iTunes. If you'd like to know what I'm up to on a day-to-day basis, and let's be frank, why wouldn't you? You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/youngamerican. We'll talk to you next time, right here on The Sound of Young America. The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered online at ask.metafilter.com.